The pandemic has had a tremendous impact on sleep, insomnia, and anxiety. If you are suffering from sleep issues like half the world is, including myself, our sponsor Real Sleep has developed the world's first personalized sleep solution customized to you. Unlike prescription and over-the-counter sleep meds, their plant-based formula works with your body to get you to sleep faster, help you sleep deeper, and cut down on sleep disturbances. While sleep is something you do alone, you're not alone when it comes to sleep issues, and Real Sleep is here to help. That's why we're teaming up with Real Sleep to give you 20% off your next purchase. Go to the link in our show notes and use the code POD to see why Real Sleep is the last product you'll ever need. Have you been in quarantine? Are you ready to enter the wild again? There's a chance no one has seen your coconuts in months. Don't ruin your first post-quarantine date with Hairy Coconuts. Would you show up to the first day of school without a haircut? Nope. Manscaped is here to provide you with the best tools for your grooming experience. The Lawnmower 3.0 is the best hygiene tool for the modern man. Because of the ceramic blade and advanced skin-safe technology, your snags will be reduced while preparing yourself for post-quarantine life. Manscaped is forever changing the grooming game with their Perfect Package 3.0 Essential Kit. The Perfect Package 3.0 comes with new and improved Lawnmower 3.0, waterproof cordless body trimmer, performance boxer briefs, and a travel bag for you to use when you're done quarantining. The Perfect Package 3.0 also comes with Manscaped Crop Preserver Deodorant and Crop Reviver Toner. The Crop Preserver is anti-chafing deodorant, which ensures your afternoon stroll through the jungle doesn't result in sticky coconuts. The Crop Reviver is a spray-on toner and made with soothing aloe and witch hazel extracts to give your coconuts a special boost. Subscribers to the Peak Hygiene Plan get a new replacement blade refill for your Lawnmower 3.0 delivered to your door every 3 months, making sure your trimmer stays fresh and clean. The light is at the end of the tunnel, fellas. Treat yourself for making it through the quarantine and welcome back to the jungle with a Perfect Package 3.0. Get 20% off plus free shipping with code SLOPDROP at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping at manscaped.com when you use SLOPDROP, S-L-O-P-D-R-O-P. Your first post-quarantine date will thank you.
Here comes the slot drop. I can answer that. That's a slot drop. What is that move? That's a slot drop.
Slot drop time.
Welcome back to the Slop Drop. This is Nathan Rogers at WooPigSumo on Twitter. My tag partners for this episode is the unluckiest man on planet Earth, Diamond David Lee, and the manager of champions, Mr. Stephen E. What's up, guys? Stephen E., I heard you're a little under the weather.
Yeah, a little under the weather, but you know, when you got a tag team partner like, you know, bad luck over here, then he can carry you through the depths of hell or whatever. You know, I figure I'd give him the opportunity to carry me through this thing tonight.
Is that why he had to get neck surgery? Because he's carrying Stephen E. through the show?
Carrying all that weight all the time.
All that weight, baby. All that weight.
No McBee tonight. He's working on his pool. So once
I want him to be working on his pool, because whenever I come down to the natural state, I want to be able to sit poolside and, you know, enjoy myself. And if his pool is, yeah. Well, we're gonna have to stop and grab a couple 4-packs of that IPA.
Yeah, you know? Chapman rocking his Roma Could Work shirt, which, by the way, you can get yours on either, was it Pro Wrestling Tees or Teesprings or something like that. Go check that out. Speaking of Roma, we touched on it just a second ago prior to recording this. We failed to mention last week that Steve Mongo McMichaels, man, just a sad deal with battling ALS, I think it was, and
yep.
Just wow, downhill fast.
Yeah, well, you know, Mongo's caught a bad rap for a number of years, and you know, I think I've said it numerous times, he's either your favorite fifth horseman or your, you know, your least favorite 15th horseman. But you know, at the end of the day, I have to say I am a fan of Mongo, whether it's the comedy aspect, you know, of his career or his multiple championship runs. It doesn't matter. Man, get well soon, Mongo. I really, you know, I was really, that really, really touched me, you know, watching watching I think it was a video or I seen some pictures that he had posted up, and yeah, that's too bad, man.
I was always a fan of how bad he was in the ring, you know. So you know, I hope he gets better. And on a for real note, you know, he is a human, and it's a bad deal that he's going through. So, you know, best wishes to him and his family.
Oh, for sure. On to the human side of wrestling. The Macho Man documentary, A&E. What'd you guys think about that?
Oh man, I loved it. You know, I think anytime that you can, you know, you can take a trip down memory lane for a couple of hours and be pulled away from the world and all the crappy stuff that is involved in it. And, you know, you can go back down memory lane for a couple hours and, you know, the one thing I took from that documentary is we lost him at a very young age, you know, I think 58, you know, was that right? Sumo 58.
I don't remember.
I think that's what it was. And, you know, it's crazy to think that, you know, that number one, that he was, you know, taken from us so sudden. You know, it wasn't like we got to see it coming or anything like that. And, you know, and then just going down memory lane and seeing, you know, seeing how he came about to become the Macho Man and whatnot was just really, 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 really fun, man. I enjoyed watching that.
How awkward was it listening to Luger?
Oh, man. But you know what, though?
I was a bad influence, you know, I'm not a murderer. I didn't force her to take it. You know, and if I could change it, I would. But you know,
you know what though, man? Like I can't remember who it was, but there was somebody that was saying something about, you know, about you know, Macho and Luger's relationship afterwards, and I think they were all right. I think they were.
Well, yeah, you know, that doesn't have anything to do with the fact that he killed her.
He was 58, by the way. I just asked Jamie.
Was it? Okay. Yeah, so. Good, Jamie, what is going on, my man?
You know, when we did a whole episode about Luger, you know, we talked about that. And people can point fingers at Luger. Bottom line is he wasn't shoving anything down her throat. And she had these issues before she got hooked up with Luger. They both did. Even Macho Man had his issues. You know, Randy, who knows? Maybe that's where it got started. I don't know. But and I believe when Lex Luger says he really regrets, that's how things went. I feel for him. I believe he puts a lot of blame on himself because he was to blame for, you know, how it ended maybe, or how he influenced her, I guess I should say, but
was enabled her.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it was cool for me to see how she broke into the business and stuff like that. And
yeah, she wanted to be a commentator.
Yeah. Vince took one look and said, commentator? Nope, we're going to put you in front of the camera. You know, like, I don't know. To me, it was a good documentary, man. And I'm really looking forward to the, you know, the series in general.
Yeah. A lot of people said it buried him. I didn't get that vibe. Some of the stuff I knew, I knew he was a St. Louis Cardinal. I thought it was interesting how his family thought they could come in and take over Memphis wrestling, and Jerry Lawler said, "No, that don't work for him,
brother."
You know, I don't think it buried him. I do think that with Gorgeous George, that little segment, I think it did highlight a lot of his faults and a lot of his demons.
Yeah.
But I don't think it necessarily buried him.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's a biography. You gotta.
You're gonna have the good and the bad and the ugly.
If that's really what happened, you gotta talk about it. But I tell you what, I don't know if I believe everything Gorgeous George was saying personally.
Well, you know, and
crap on a lot of that stuff.
What sucks is looking at, you know, the pictures that they had of Macho. You know, they picked the ones out that made him look like he was jacked up. You know, and man, like some of them, just looking at his eyes, it's like, golly, man, you don't realize how bad he was. You know, but. I don't know. You know, Kevin Nash kind of touched on it, and you know, Randy was living a younger persona and running, and she was a stripper and into that life, and yeah, who knows?
Yeah. Speaking of a stripper, I didn't realize his attire was kind of based off of a pimp until.
I just
thought it was funky, flashy stuff. You know.
Yeah. It's like you know, whenever they were talking about that, I was glued watching because you know I had never heard that before, and when he said that. You know, you kind of take a step back and you look and you go, yeah, it is kind of over the top. That is kind of, you know, Yeah, that does. It does kind of resemble a pimp's outfit, because Lord knows, you know, you could not be a pimp walking around with clothes like that.
I thought it was interesting, Steamboat talking about all the stuff he had to memorize for that WrestleMania 3. Because Randy,
160 moves or something.
Something like that.
160 spots he had to remember, you know, what order. Because Randy liked to go over everything. He didn't like to call it in the ring. He wanted to everything to be pre-worked out and ready to roll.
Yeah.
Well, and I thought it was funny when they were talking about Hogan sitting there and he goes, I don't think that they were trying to outdo us, you know, and then it jumps to Steamboat and he's like, yeah, we were trying to outdo him. So we had to make sure that we wrote everything
down. It turned out to be one of the greatest matches in WrestleMania history.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, when you talk about, you know, greatest matches ever, you know, I don't know if there is one conversation that takes place, you know, when it comes to the greatest match of all time, you know, there's got to be somebody in that group of 2-3 people talking that mentioned that WrestleMania 3 match. You know, just the highlights that they were showing during that documentary was getting me pumped up. And like, I just remember thinking like, man, I want to watch this. I want to watch that match when I'm done. And I haven't yet. But, you know, it just that couple of minutes that they aired was gold, man. And it just that's what being a wrestling fan is all about, is being able to witness that kind of stuff and not only witness it, but, you know, remember it and carry it out through, you know, your lifetime. Like, that's something that, you know, I think as a wrestling fan, all three of us can agree that we'll always be able to lean on that as far as, you know, somebody was saying that, you know, in a poll, I think is what it was, in one of these groups on Facebook or Twitter or whatever. And they were talking about, you know, like what match do you show somebody who isn't a wrestling fan, you know, to grab them, to hook them. And that was, I mean, that you show them Macho Man and Steamboat WrestleMania 3.
Yeah, can't go wrong with that one.
No.
Gorgeous George, though, she said something, and I was like, wait, what is she talking about? She said she found hidden monitors in a closet in a safe watching her house. This is 1998, guys. I don't know how valid. There would have to be lots of issues.
The only thing that would make me think that would have some truth behind it is if you listen to anybody who was around him in the 80s, he was 100% just obsessed with the control of Elizabeth and
the paranoia.
I was thinking more of the technological stuff from 1998.
You gotta think if anybody can afford it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, but would that be possible? I mean,
yeah.
I don't know. You know, Gorgeous George, you know, I think a lot of what she said was true. The partying and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I kind of thought the same thing when she opened it up and she said, I just stood there and said, Take me home.
Yeah.
Like, okay, so if he's got your house bugged, why do you want to go home?
Anyway, great documentary. If you haven't watched it, check it out. Another one I gave a sneak peek a few days ago, was the new Pillman, Dark Side of the Ring. We won't talk too much about it because tonight they're airing the full 2-hour version, which I can't wait to watch it when we're done here. But in the meantime, we did a whole episode on the Slop Drop, episode 81. Go check that out. It's about Brian Pillman. And then next week, after we watch the full version tonight, we can talk about, you know, the dark side of the ring. But
yeah, I know what I'm doing after we're done with this.
I will say Pillman, especially, he was a trailblazer for smaller guys, for sure.
Right. They showed on AEW Dark that Pillman Jr. wore his the Bengal print or whatever, trunks in memory of his dad. I thought that was pretty cool. He looks so much like him, you know, as it is.
Yeah. Speaking of smaller guys, Daniel Bryan, former WWE World Champion, Intercontinental Champion, US Champion, Tag Champion, Money in the Bank winner, Triple Crown Champion. His contract has expired.
You know, one of the accolades you left off there was the champion of the people, not the people's champion, but, you know,
was it, man, the universe with the wooden belt?
Oh, you know what, man? Like, oh man, it was called the eco-friendly belt. Yes. As a matter of fact, And you know, one of those popped up for sale, and I actually almost bought one of the damn things because I think it's brilliant. What I don't like about it is it's the same price as the metal and leather and all that other stuff when, you know, they're using a burlap sack and, you know, and wood, but it's still a really, really, really cool belt. I can't believe that somebody, whether it was done on purpose or not, I can't believe that somebody has allowed Daniel Bryan's contract to end. You know, that guy is he's I think the best babyface, you know, on TV.
Yeah. You know, we talk a lot about how Chris Jericho just continues to stay relevant and reinvent himself. Daniel Bryan's the same way. No matter what you put that guy, what role he fills, he does it, you know, tremendously.
The problem I see it though with him is he's either main card or he's down at the bottom somewhere. He's never even in the middle. Like they, you know, he's either the champion chasing the championship or he's curtain jerk.
Well, and when you think about it, those are the two most important positions to be on a card. You either want to, if you're not in the main event, then you want to be in the opening match.
Yeah, but regardless, you know? Okay, this dude could go to any other promotion out there and be the main mm-hmm. guy. Be the face of that company.
And we will see because he's going to go somewhere. Now, I think because his contract expired, is he required to sit out for 90 days?
I don't think so because he wasn't released. I don't think he's going to go anywhere else. Where would you guys like to see him go?
I don't see him going anywhere else where there isn't a crowd. I think that is something that you would save for, you know, a crowd. In fact, if WWE was smart about booking him, they would pull him off of TV and not have him on TV and then wait for them to get an arena full of people and have him come out. Because, you know, if you pull him off TV for a couple of weeks, everybody's just going to assume that, he's waiting to jump to, you know, AEW or Ring of Honor or MLW or New Japan or whatever else is out there. And, you know, kind of give you a little bit of that shock, you know, that, oh man, you know, I don't know. I think that the universe would probably, you know, the WWE universe would probably be surprised if he sticks around.
I don't know where I want to see him at. I don't want to see him in AEW, and I'm a huge AEW fan. But they've got right now. I feel like they're set. They've got enough going on, but I don't know how much he could contribute to the show. He would obviously do great at MLW, at ROH, at anywhere he goes, he's going to be the face of the company. But I don't think he'll go anywhere.
I don't either. If he did go anywhere, I could see New Japan.
Yeah,
maybe AEW. Can you imagine a Kenny Omega versus Daniel Bryan match?
The problem, man, I tell you, the problem with AEW right now, and don't get me wrong, like I said, I'm a huge AEW fan, but they've got a lot going on. They've got, you know, a million factions. They've got good storylines and stuff going.
I mean, what do they have? 12, 13 factions? You know, legitimately. I mean, it's up there.
Yeah. But they're also got good storylines going. Mm-hmm. They've got good product going. And I just don't – yeah, you know, him versus Kenny Omega would be huge. But, you know, in a two-hour show, where do you even bring him in at to be able to work him in with all these other feuds that you've got going?
I'm a fan of factions, but when everybody's in a faction, there's too many factions, and factions mean nothing, you know.
Well, you look back, man, look back at the NWO, okay? NWO is going to go down in history, you know, as the faction, right? But the problem is every week, you know, you had two or three guys jumping ship, and they're after a while, it was like, who cares?
When you had 30 members, you know.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I think the way that AEW is doing it, you know, I mean, who's got the most members of their faction? Dark Order, you know. I mean, for the most part, they're stuck to about 3-4 people.
The Nightmare family was so big, they've split up into two factions. Cody's got his side, and now QT Marshall's got his side. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what's next for Daniel Bryan. I don't know. I think he probably stays with the WWE. They just rehired John Laurinaitis, which is his stepfather-in-law.
Yeah.
From what I've read, you know, he may just kind of take a step back and be a part-time wrestler and maybe do some backstage stuff, which I could definitely see work out. I would like to see him in NXT. I think some matches between him and Adam Cole or Kyle O'Reilly would be fire.
Mm-hmm.
But I want – that live crowd, like you said, Steven. Mm-hmm. The crowd is so important. Even AEW, they just have a handful of people right now, but that handful of people still makes up. It's better than
you've seen last week. You know, in Jacksonville, they had the UFC 261, I believe, is what it was.
That crowd was on fire.
Right? Can you imagine? Can you imagine what it's? I mean, it's going to be like Monday Night Raw after WrestleMania hot. You know, I can't wait.
It sucks because I look back over the last year and like AEW, the no crowd hurt AEW.
Yeah.
It really did.
Yeah.
You had Sting debut. Mm-hmm. You know, you had Miro debut. You had all these other people debut, and it's like, you know, Paul White and you know, the list goes on, but all of these that would have just been, you know, mega pops from the crowd and Matt Hardy and, you know, just,
FTR.
I can't, that's what I was going to say.
FTR, I was waiting for him to finish and I was going to look at him and tell him, I can't believe that you're going to mention FTR.
But that's what I'm saying, you know, like, man, if they would have had a crowd when FTR drove that old Chevrolet pickup in there and when they popped the door open and got out, I got goosebumps.
Even when, the best friend's the mom. I can't think of the name. Even when the mom rolls up in the minivan, that would get a pop.
Yeah. I, you know, guys, this shows how important, you know, how important the fans are, you know, in a TV taping or, you know, just in general, you know, I mean, I'm sure all the boys are just itching to get back to work. You know, I mean, as much fun as it is, you know, not being on the road, you know, those guys, they live and breathe on the road and you condition yourself to live that lifestyle. And, you know, those guys have been off the road for a year and, you know, don't get me wrong. I know a lot of them have got families and whatnot, but I'm sure there's a lot of them that are itching to get back on the road.
Christopher Daniels, that dude, that poor guy's gained about 80 pounds.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah.
Christopher Daniels.
Yeah.
Is he?
Yeah, you didn't watch AEW last
night. No, I haven't. I, you know, I watch AEW, but not as much as you know, I probably should. You know, I catch the highlights and, you know, and whatnot, but I, you know, like, as far as like a full-fledged fan, I'm not quite there yet. I like what they're doing, don't get me wrong, and I like a lot of their talent, but,
just need to shut your dirty mouth is what you need to
do. I know Chapman's a huge AEW fan, which is great because it helps balance things out. I'm more...
Right.
I've said it a million times. I watch NXT for the in-ring, the wrestling, the hard-hitting, more physicality stuff. And AEW is more, I don't know, it's a little bit of WCW throwback, and it's a little more entertaining, I guess. But there's still a lot of stuff. They've had, a year and a half, almost 2 years to get worked out, and I'm still seeing the same issues, which we're
about to get. We're going to talk about AEW shortly as far as last night, but their camera guys, they need to, you know, last night could have been a really good show. Their camera guys really screwed up a lot.
Yeah. Speaking Daniel Bryan, you know, we've talked about his contract. Somebody they just re-signed, Eva Marie. They just released Samoa Joe, Mickey James, the Iconics.
Exactly what I was going to say.
Just to bring back,
they had to clear up some salary caps so they could afford to bring her back. I imagine, you know, like that. I honestly don't get it because, you know, like, you know, we were talking about heat the other day, mm-hmm. and we were talking about the different types of heat that one can get, you know, and of course you want to try to avoid what they used to call the Xbox heat and. You know, and I even wondered if some of Vicky Guerrero's heat wasn't a little bit of X-Pac heat, you know, towards the end of her run. But, you know, when you look at Eva Marie, like, they are never, ever going to be able to set her up as a face. And I don't know if she's capable of getting any type of real heat other than that X-Pac heat, you know.
They need to bring her immediately in as a heel.
Immediately bring her in as a heel. But, you know, I still don't know, you know, if that would get her over. You know, they're going to have to line her up with, you know, maybe like a big star or, you know, I don't know. And when you think about it, who would they line her up with? I wouldn't even know. You know, it's a crapshoot. And I like you said earlier, Sumo, they literally released Samoa Joe, you know, 3 weeks ago. They released, you know, the Iconics. They released Mickie James, who could work circles around, you know, Eva Marie. And like, I'm not going to I think Mickie James is just as good looking as Eva Marie. You know what I mean? And she can work. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see what they do and where they run with this. Because, man, I can tell you what the first impression that I got from the IWC was boo.
Yeah, yeah. I realize she's done some stuff outside of wrestling to be successful and has a huge social media presence, which I'm sure that will help some things. But still, you let go of Mickie James and the Iconics, Bo Dallas and Samoa Joe, and that's who you bring in.
Well, now yeah. Mickie James and Nick Aldis, they're together, right?
Oh yeah, they've been married for a while.
Yeah, so I mean, how many weeks until she shows up over at
NWA?
NWA
probably mid June when that 90-day clause is up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know, I mean, like, you think about it, you know, she'd be an asset to any women's division that's out there.
Immediate. You know, I mean,
immediate, yeah. She would go straight to the top of the women's division.
Instant name recognition and incredible in-ring talent.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing is, this is where the difference is between the male roster and the female roster of AEW. Bringing Daniel Bryan in, as busy as the males are now, I don't think it's a good move. But their women's division is so bad, bringing Mickie James in, I think, would be a huge win for them.
A huge elevation, no pun intended.
And they're talking about bringing Samoa Joe. Who was Chris Jericho put a tweet out, said
Samoa Joe,
the door's open or the phone's on or whatever, trying to tag Samoa Joe in it. So
yeah,
you know.
Well, now that we're on,
I think that's the obvious decision for Joe. You know,
yeah, I think he'd do good there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I mean. Hell, he ran with a bunch of those guys for many, 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 many years, you know.
No, no,
Christopher Daniels, you know.
I know their roster's getting a little bit inflated, but they don't have a huge number of big guys.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Joe's a lot bigger than what people think. So he's up there. He's at least as big as Miro, if not taller.
Well, and multi-talented, you know. It's like I don't know about you guys, but you know, Could you see Joe replace Excalibur, you know, on the, I don't know, you know, I mean,
you know, Lawler said it best during his little biography that, you know, commentary wasn't where it was at, you know, yeah. It was never as fun as being in the ring, you know, but God dang, he was good. And then you look at Samoa Joe, and don't get me wrong, Samoa Joe is great in the ring, but God dang, he's good on the mic too.
Very good on
commentary.
Yes. Yep. Same with Chris Jericho. When he does commentary in AEW, like, man, he's good.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, look at some of the greats. Gorilla Monsoon was a wrestler. Mm-hmm. Jesse Ventura was a wrestler. Some of the best. Bobby Heenan. Some of the best play-by-play, or not color commentary guys, were wrestlers.
Yeah. And it sucks because I'm not necessarily sure that's where he wants to go or wants to do. You know, I think he wants back in the ring, but you know, and I was going to say, it takes a special person to be able to do it. You look at, you know, look at Dustin Rhodes. I'm a huge Dustin Rhodes fan, right? Dude can work better now than he could 20 years ago. But would he be good on as commentary? I really don't think so.
So Arn Anderson admits, you know, he's one of the best to ever step in the ring. And he's like, I can't do commentary.
And you know what? In the 80s, he was one of the best on the mic. But exactly. I don't think he'd be good on commentary. You know, it takes a certain personality, a certain talent to be able to do it. Joe's lucky enough that once his in-ring career is over, you know, probably another 20 years from now, he's got something to fall back on.
I think that's what makes Corey Graves and even Pat McAfee now. Corey Graves was a former NXT guy. Yeah. Great color commentary.
Oh, yeah.
And like you said last week, Stephen, he's all aboard the Pat McAfee train because he's money too.
That guy is money right there. But, you know, like you said, Corey Graves, you know, he catches a lot of flack from the IWC. And every time, like, you know, you got to differentiate, you know, whether the heat is what he's aiming for or like, God, this guy just really sucks. You know, I think that Corey Graves gives everybody what they want. They want somebody to hate. And, you know, you know, there's certain characteristics about Corey that you look at and he just, you know, you want to punch him in the face. He just has that face that you want to punch. And man, he's quick-witted. I think he's great, you know, but like I said, you know, with every role, you know, Joe's never going to be the quick-witted, you know, commentary. He's going to be the guy that, you know, if you get in his face, he's going to get right back at you, you know. And I love Joe on commentary. I want to see Joe back in the ring. You know, I want to see Joe back in the ring against somebody in front of a live crowd. Because, you know, those chants that you used to catch in NXT, the Joe's going to kill you and, you know, all that good stuff. Like, man, I just think when he shows up somewhere and there's no doubt in anybody's mind that he's going to show up, I think the roof is going to get blown off of the building when he does finally make his re-debut to wherever he goes. And hopefully he won't be bound to just the commentating position.
But before we get into AEW Blood and Guts, did you check out the Cameron Grimes NXT gimmick he's got going on?
I watched what you sent us. The watch. You know,
I tell you what, I watched about a minute and a half of it only to kind of get pissed off because I am not even joking that he stole that from me. I the whole GameStop thing, you know, I years ago, I wanted to kind of just take my character to a different level and, you know, kind of hit the skids, you know, instead of coming out wearing the nice suits, you know, from, you know, lower into Manhattan or the upper east end of Manhattan, come out with my, you know, pockets pulled out of my pants, broke, you know, that type of thing. And then, you know, then of course catch some hot stock that would put me back up into the Upper East End. And, you know, I think it's great. You know, I joke around about it being my gimmick, but you know, I really did think that a couple of years ago, but I'm glad to see that somebody's doing it and, you know, by God, it's working. You know, because that was gold, man.
There was another one Tuesday night where he tried to get into a club, and there was, you know, I guess, too many people. His name wasn't on the list or whatever. And Ted DiBiase strolls out, and he's like, "Ted DiBiase." I'm like, so there's another cameo by the Million Dollar Man. I don't know where they're going with. Obviously, Ted DiBiase is not going to have a match, but they now have him involved somehow or another, which is interesting.
Maybe they'll put him back as a manager and bring that $1 million belt back.
I
saw something the other day that made me giggle. It was talking about, you know, anybody out there that is building a home right now is going to know exactly what I'm talking about. The price of materials has skyrocketed. And I seen that damn meme that said that, according to lumber prices today, Hacksaw Jim Duggan was just as rich as a $1 million man back in the day. I thought that was brilliant, man. But
okay, AEW Dynamite Blood and Guts. Just real quick, Moxley and Eddie Kingston defeated Omega and Nakazawa. Cody Rhodes defeated QT Marshall. Britt Baker defeated Julia Hart. SCU defeated the Varsity Blondes, Jurassic Express, and the Acclaim to earn a shot at the AEW tag titles next week. And the main event, the Pinnacle defeated Inner Circle in a Blood and Guts match.
What about Miro?
Oh, he's going to get a...
he's getting a TNT title shot
next week.
Let's talk about the hottest guy on the roster.
If Darby Allin can compete.
No. They said if he can't compete, then he forfeits the title.
So how does Darby Allin not compete? Does he slip off of his skateboard on his way back?
He got thrown down the stairs.
He got tossed down some stairs last night.
Or not SCU.
Does he still have his skateboard?
Ethan Page and Scorpio Sky.
Yeah, they threw him down the stairs. He didn't come out with it, so I don't know if he's still doing the gimmick or not.
Ethan Page.
Ethan Page is a talented dude.
He is a talented dude.
Blood and Guts. War Games.
Okay, so the main event, I liked the match. I like the Hell in a Cell type updated cage that they gave the old War Games, which I like the old school War Games rule. It's basically the same as it used to be back in the day. I even like the booking. I liked who won over. But basically the same finish as when the NWO defeated the Four Horsemen in the War Games match at WCW Fall Brawl 97. During that match, the NWO was going to smash Flair's head into the cage doors unless the Horsemen surrendered, which they did, making the NWO the winners. They went ahead, still smashed his head to the door. Last night, the Inner Circle surrendered when MJF threatens to throw Jericho off the top of the cage. Inner Circle surrenders, Pinnacle wins, and of course, MJF continues to toss him off the cage into a nice comfy bed, basically.
You mean it wasn't on the it wasn't the metal
well, they said concrete. Excalibur called it concrete. As soon as I saw this huge platform next to the cage, I'm like, crash pad, somebody's going through it tonight. I was hoping it wouldn't be the finish. It was.
Now let's be fair. You know, let's be fair. In today's wrestling, crash pads are almost part of the show. You know,
but the camera doesn't zoom in.
Yeah, you're right. Nobody bitches about Shane. Falling into a crash pad every year. You know,
let's talk about the camera, guys. How long has AEW been up? 2 years?
A couple years, yeah.
You know, they've had, like you said earlier, they've had plenty of time. So they've got, who started out? Dax? I get their names mixed up. Dax and Cash.
Yeah.
I think Dax
is the bald one, right?
Yes.
So Dax is in there, and they're doing something, Dax and Sammy Guevara, and I see Dax go.
Yep.
And I was like, son of a bitch, he's about to cut himself.
Yep.
And sure enough, he threw him into the cage. He gets back up and he's cut. And I'm like, really, guys? Really?
And it showed him do it as well.
And it showed Cash.
Yeah.
When Cash went to do it, I was like, he's about to cut himself.
Well, sure as crap,
here comes Jericho. Pulling his wrist back. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me.
One of the things that I love about AEW is that they give Jim Cornette enough ammunition to keep the masses entertained for at least a week. You know, I can't wait to hear Jim Cornette's take on it.
They showed their magic hand again, you know, mm-hmm. nothing sly about anything. Great. It would have been a great match, but I might be nitpicking a little bit, but you gotta call it out when you see it. And
I've got three guys
you watch get their blades out. Mm. Excalibur called it a concrete floor. It was a big platform that was obviously placed there for a reason.
That he went through, which obviously wasn't concrete.
It was painted to look like metal.
Yeah.
Like mm-hmm. the little diamond plate metal stuff.
Diamond, yep, yep.
Falls off. The cardboard just folds up all around him, and then you can see the comfy crash pad right under him. I'm like, oh.
But let me tell you something about the cage that I really liked. Did you notice the platform along the outside of the cage?
Yeah, and I like that. Yeah.
That was awesome. It was like an inch thick on the very top.
Oh, yeah.
That goes around that they could walk on that was sturdy mm-hmm. instead of walking on the actual cage itself.
NXT has a thing called the pit fight, which is really cool. It's different than, but there's a it's an open cage that there's not a top to it, but there is a platform where they can get up and walk around and fight.
I thought that was a good deal. I liked that. But, you know, WCW, one of the biggest things in WCW that everybody complains about, and Kevin Nash actually did a shoot interview about this, is their cameras. You know, WCW never had good camera guys. They weren't, you know, when you have a guy jumping off the top rope, you've got WWE down here looking at him, making him look bigger than life, and then you got over WCW, he's standing on the apron shooting, you know, it just wasn't good. And AEW's following that same thing. Could have been a great match. There's no reason why we saw three guys grab their wrists to get that blade out of the wrist.
You could even see Jericho and MJF kind of talking their way through it a couple times up on top. And they're like, guys, we can see them planning about
He's up there. So he's up there on all fours while MJF's standing up. And the camera zooms into Jericho going, hey, go ahead, pull me up so you can get ready to throw me off. This is the finish. And looks back down. Then they throw the son of a gun off and he falls through the concrete. They zoom in on him and Chris Jericho looks up at the doc, goes, yeah, I'm okay. He looks at the camera and goes,
So come on. So how much more can you, a person who will tell everybody every week how much you love AEW.
I do love
How many more finishes to the pay-per-views are they going to have to mess up?
So it wasn't as quite as a big dud as the exploding ring match, yeah. But it still, as Bill Ross said, as flat as a plate of piss. Did I expect them to throw Jericho onto bare concrete? No. Onto a metal platform? No. But I expect them to appear that way, you know?
Well, like I said, they've got – Tony Khan's got enough money in the world, or his dad or whoever. They're going to have to get a better camera team, or their camera team's going to be the fall of their company.
Well, not only
that. There's certain stuff you're not supposed to see, and we saw it more this week than ever.
The camera angles and certain camera cuts are an issue. They're burying the refs is a huge issue. They just, you know,
when it comes to shooting a television match, you know, the people shooting the match, the camera people are almost as important as the referee, you know, and a lot of people not being a part of the business don't realize how important that referee is, how important it is to have a good referee in there. You know, when you've got Chapman, you hit on it earlier with the way that WWE, you know, with WWE, when Kane or The Undertaker came out, you know, they were shooting them from underneath, you know, giving them that perception of being larger than life or whatever. And, you know, if these guys aren't trained to look for certain spots, or these guys should have at least been in the production meetings and was able to sit down and go, okay, well, we need to have a camera here. We need to, you know, get behind them at this point, you know, or whoever is in the truck calling the camera angles is probably the one that is more in trouble than the actual camera people, because, you know, they're shooting it, but there's one guy in the truck who's calling it, going, okay, go to 4, go to 5, go to 7, you know, depending on how many cameras they've got. And I think they run 7 or 8 of them, don't they? I mean, they're up there. I think they run quite a few cameras.
They run enough not to have mistakes like
that. Yes. Yes, absolutely.
They just learn how to shoot. Like you said, WWE, you just mentioned it. Somebody's coming up, that WWE starts from the bottom usually. That's what AEW should have done last night, showing him coming off and not even showing him landing into that.
Yeah.
They not only showed it, they pretty much zoomed in and you see cardboard and cushions all around them.
What they did.
Yeah.
Like I said, they showed their magic hand.
It should have been from across the ring, because they've got that camera that goes aerial. So it should have been on top with them at their back turned. And all you should have seen was the back of MJF going. And that's it.
But you know what, guys? Yep. So, you know, honestly, we can sit here and we can pick it apart all day long. Hopefully somebody on their side is looking at it, doing the same thing and going, man, this is something that we need to improve on. And, you know, starting Wednesday, we're going to really, you know, push to try to get that.
Man. Well, you know, the thing is, they've got people like Dean Malenko in the back, you know, Arn Anderson, all these guys. I couldn't imagine after this week's show that those guys aren't going. Well,
Jim Ross.
Yeah. Jim Ross.
I feel bad for him sometimes.
He's got to call that shit.
You can tell when there's some, and he hates the word wonky, but you can tell when there's some wonky stuff going on in the ring and he's got to call it. A lot of times, sometimes he'll call it out, or sometimes he just won't say nothing in Excalibur. He'll just let Excalibur talk about it.
Well, what I'm saying is, with all them legends that you have back there in the back, I find it hard to believe that they're not having the exact conversation that we're having about the camera. You know, that's something that I can't stress enough is going to have to be fixed, because
the ref situation,
you know, they don't understand
that. What's the ref situation?
Well, they do whatever they want. And somebody will be out of the ring for, three or four minutes. I'm like, where's the tag count or a tag match? And that may not be important to a lot of people, but pro wrestling, it's very important.
You know, even to the point to where Vince McMahon years ago came out and was like, you know, anybody that puts their hands on the refs, you know, immediately disqualified. And, you know, and not only that, but, you know, certain, you know, like get with the refs and know your counts and all that stuff. Because, you know, the ref isn't going to stop. None of this, you know, one, two. Yep. You know, none of that. They want to, they want to make it look as like, presentable as possible.
Bully Ray said on Busted Open, he said, if they would just tell us before the match, hey, there's basically no rules in this match. The ref is just there to either make the three count or call it off if someone submits. I can accept that. But when it's a regular match and the tag team is more or less, you don't even have to tag. You're just in and out, or you can be out of the ring for 3, 4, 5 minutes, or the ref can watch. For instance, last night, Cody Rhodes and QT Marshall. Cody goes to hit him with his weight belt. Ref, oh, you can't do that. Put it back. As soon as he does that, QT Marshall gets one and starts beating the piss out of Cody, and the ref's like, just watching it. I'm like, wait, it's not consistent.
Yeah. Yep.
No, they've got a lot to work on. The camera and the refs are the two biggest things, because that's what's just going to bring their company down. They're at an uphill battle already.
I would throw in multiple high spots and false finishes.
Man, here's the thing. You know, you can throw that in, but honestly, let's face facts. Those guys especially when you've got the Young Bucks that are the, you know, senior vice president or whatever the shit they are, we're stuck with that. That, unfortunately, that's just something we're going to be stuck with. Those guys do high spots, so they like seeing them throughout the matches. But the camera angles can be fixed. The referee issues can be fixed. And I feel like maybe they got a little bit of cockiness to them since they kind of won the Wednesday Night War or whatever. And move but NXT. And what I'm afraid
they just
of
now cracked a million, and Raw is the worst wrestling show on TV, and they're still cracking over a million. So,
but that's what I'm saying. I think they got a little cocky. They don't realize they have a really, really long uphill battle, you know, to be on the top or be, you know, anything like that. They've got to get these minute issues fixed. You know, somebody's out of the ring, you count the 10 count. You know, that's their job to get back in the ring and roll back out, you know.
If you don't have someone enforcing the rules, then the heels have no rules to break. And if the heels have no rules to break, then they're not heels. They can't get heat.
Right.
You know what I mean? Well, you know, and that's, you know, gosh, I hate to even bring this up, but that's kind of another issue with AEW. If you look, you don't have a whole lot of baby faces and heels. You know, you've just got this team versus this team, or this guy versus this guy. You know, aside from Britt Baker and MJF, you know, you really don't have a lot of any other heel.
Those two are probably my favorite people on the AEW roster.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and that's the thing, is they could do so much more. But that's exactly it. You know, Ric Flair wouldn't have been the dirtiest player in the game if he didn't have a referee that he had to sneak around to do what he did.
If he didn't have rules to break, he wouldn't be a dirty player.
But you know, in wrestling, there's ways of breaking those rules and doing them in a certain way that you know, not only it'll get you heat. And, you know, nobody. You know, for instance, you know, the 10 count. If you're out there, you know, the ref is doing his 10 count. You know, he's probably taking 30 seconds to get to 10 if he's doing it right. Well, what do you do as a heel, you know, to break that count up? Slide in, slide right back out. Guess what? Then you got then you just bought yourself another 30 seconds or whatever it is to you know, so it doesn't look, you know, you're doing the coward, you know, you're doing the cowardly, you know, heel gimmick, but you're doing it in a way that the crowd, you know, is gonna react to it and not necessarily go, you know, God, you know, the refs aren't even, you know, the refs aren't doing their jobs, so they're not paying attention to what's going on. Like, you know, you don't really put that shine on the refs, because the refs are there just to do their counts, and then you slide in, slide out, boom, you broke the count, you know. They should maybe be doing more of that, although I need to really watch last night's pay-per-view, because, you know,
the first hour apparently was taped. And I guess there were some upset fans that got there to watch the whole card. And the Blood and Guts match was really the only one that took place last night. And they had to refund a lot of tickets from some people last night. The fans in attendance watched the first hour on the big screen like we did. And then they watched the actual Blood and Guts match live. But that's all they got to see.
So they got the closed circuit TV.
Yeah.
You know, you talk about the heel stuff and all this, you know, kind of having the referee and having rules. Last month or month before, when Miz was still the champion, and he was, you know, he faked stomach cramps and something else trying to get out of Bobby Lashley. You know, one that title change should have never happened on a Monday Night Raw, but whatever. When they went out there and they made him go out there, whenever the referee was out there and referee rings the bell, I wish Miz would have looked the referee dead in the eye, kicked him in the nuts, and walked away and got disqualified and let it move on to a pay-per-view. But that type of stuff, you don't have no, you know, you don't have none of that. Ruth, how many times did Ric Flair get disqualified in the 80s, 70s and 80s, 90s even, and not care? Kept going on. You know, he kicked the dude in the nuts, got disqualified, and he went over there, and the rest of the four horsemen came out, and they just beat the guy to a pump.
Hey, DQ is a way where your opponent gets the W, but the champ, keeps the belt.
Exactly. You know, and I just feel like we miss a lot of that stuff nowadays. I feel like a lot of that old school, that heel wrestling is just gone.
Yeah. Well, the in-ring stuff, like you mentioned the Young Bucks, that's just their style. That's probably the direction AEW's going. That's fine. But something that has not changed and will not change is good old storytelling.
Yeah.
It's been since Adam and Eve, man. There's been stories to be told.
Yeah, Adam and Steve in your case.
Well, you know, the narrative has changed over the years, but it's always the same. You know, good versus evil. You know, good versus evil. You know,
dude, I'm going to tell you, last night with Darby Allin, right? I liked that little gimmick, that little segment they did. He came out fighting. He climbed up the ladder and did his coffin drop, and they threw him down the stairs and. You know, and astonish themselves or acclaim themselves as the heel of that feud that they got. And I thought it was good. I thought that's something we haven't seen in a long time. Yeah. Beat that guy, pick him up and start him into a
couple truck. Things about that, but this goes back to their roster kind of getting inflated. I'm disappointed that, you know, they brought Ethan Page in and just put him right into a tag team. Scorpio Sky, they took him out of SCU and just put him in with this other tag team with Ethan Page. I'm like, Scorpio Sky was on track to be a hot single star. And now you took him away from this tag team and just put him into another tag team.
Yeah, you got to think about it. You got to have a formative opponents for the Young Bucks. Would you say senior vice presidents, whatever they are?
Yeah,
I don't know.
All right, fellas. Well, it's about time to check out this Pillman documentary. We got anything else before we wrap it up?
Shoot, man, anything else interesting happen on Raw this last week? I didn't watch it, so I wouldn't know.
Over a million somehow.
I don't know the state of wrestling. I think it's more important now than any other time in the last 20 years is to get out and support your local, you know, your local wrestling, your local independent wrestling company that's near you. You know, look on the internet, people. There's one near you. Go check those out. You know, the thing I like about those shows is you're real interactive with the talent, and you know, and you're not seeing something that you know, how do I say it, is just. It might be a recycled mess, but it's an entertaining recycled mess. You know, I don't know. Maybe we're being too critical, guys. Maybe we're being too critical with AEW and the E right now. Because there's just so much. There's so much bad going on right now. It's hard to talk about the good. You know, but in the same sense, I hate to dog the business that. You know, that I really do love, you know, I, you know, even before ever, you know, coming out the curtain, you know, I was always a fan of wrestling and, you know, I just find myself each week, just drifting a little bit.
I don't ever want to be like Cornette, just dogging, being so negative about everything. Yeah. I don't want to be that guy, but sometimes you got to call a spade, but there is plenty of good stuff out there to watch.
Yeah. Yep, you just got to find it. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Mid-States Wrestling, June 12th.
Yes, yep. Mid-States Wrestling, Springfield, Missouri, June 12th.
It's going to be there.
Going to be a banger.
That's going to work for me, brother.
And as it gets closer, we'll probably have a few guys competing on that card on. So.
Yeah.
Well, that about wraps it up. Follow us on Facebook at The Slop Drop, on Twitter at The Slop Drop 1, wherever you get your podcasts. We are there. Check us out on YouTube. Subscribe, as the YouTubers say, smash that subscribe button. Either way, as always, thank you all for listening. Until next time, we're out of here.
Goodbye and good night.